The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball reporter, insider, will be with us in a couple of minutes to talk about the AL and NLCS. A lot of baseball. Outrage over Yasiel Puig. Is it a cultural thing? Latin players like to celebrate. Are we trying to conform players here in the USA? Where Puig flips the batter last night, Carlos Beltran is outraged at Yasiel Puig. I want to talk to Pedro about the cultural differences and if Puig deserves a fastball in the ribs. I don't see that the case in the postseason. I think that's what happens next year. Kurt Warner is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. NFL Network analyst, Valley resident. Always good to catch up with Kurt. Timely, I think, with the struggles of Carson Palmer. So many of you fans saying, it's time to change quarterback. I'll ask Kurt Warner, is it time to change quarterback? I also want to talk to Kurt about Larry Fitzgerald. I've said this the last couple of weeks. I saw it again on Sunday. I think Larry Fitzgerald's frustrated. Fans are frustrated that Larry Fitzgerald fumbled the football. But is he being used in the right way in the Bruce Arians offense? Is there reason to be concerned if you're a Cardinals fan about Larry Fitzgerald? I'll ask Kurt Warner about that directly, coming up at the bottom of the hour. Other things on my mind in the world of sports as well today. Very busy day, a lot of college football. I don't know if you heard about the volleyball girl that drove home her drunk teammate, and now the girl that went to pick up her drunk teammate has been suspended, even though she was doing the right thing as a high school kid. I got to get into that a little bit in the hour. But first, our Facebook question of the day with Eric Sorensen, as always, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything. Fire away.
Well, Brad, I don't know if you realize, but 25 years ago today, this happened.
But the game right now is at the plate.
Yes, Vin Scully on the call.
Kurt, I can hear that over and over and over, by the way.
Kurt Gibson's monumental, historic home run against the A's and Dennis Eckersley. So it got us here thinking.
Yeah. They haven't found that ball, by the way. That ball's never been found.
That ball's not going to be found. You probably read the same, the Darren Rovell story on ESPN.com. It was phenomenal.
What would that ball be worth?
Well, they say because the memorabilia hysteria has kind of died down ever since the Bonds and Sosa and Maguire steroid scandal.
It'll come back, though.
But
it's
still, like, I mean, that's a memory. I mean, yeah, who wouldn't want to have that home run ball?
Sure.
Anyway,
I can authenticate it.
So. We digress.
Yeah, we do.
As
that
a Valley sports fan,
yeah.
Do you view Kurt Gibson as a Diamondback or a Dodger? This is somewhat of a generational question because when that home run happened, I grew up, there were no Diamondbacks here. I'm 39 years old, so I grew up a Dodger fan. So I will always remember Kirk Gibson as a Dodger. But the younger generation may not.
Yeah, he's a Tiger to me. That may be dating myself, and it is dating myself. Sure, I mean, I was out there when that happened, and who could forget it, you know, growing up out in Southern California. I don't know. I'm just odd, right? I'm not breaking news here, but I don't look at Kirk Gibson and say, boy, he's a Dodger, he's a Tiger, he's a Diamondback. It's like he was a hell of a baseball player. I don't care what jersey he wore. Don't care. He in all of his stops as a player, all two of them, he was very good. As a Diamondback, he's just another manager. He's a former. It's kind of like when I watch the Dodgers and I see Davey Lopes in a Dodger uniform. It looks right. When Steve Sachs was here this year, it didn't look right. And then they blew him out. It didn't look so right at all.
Anyway, head over to Facebook.com/pros2preps. Brad clearly didn't answer my question. He just confused you guys. Again, as a Valley sports fan.
Think about this. What are you kidding me?
Let me finish. Yeah. As a Valley sports fan, do you view Kurt Gibson as a Diamondback, current manager, or a Dodger?
He's
not
a Dodger.
A Tiger, not a Michigan State Spartan,
he's
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Prospreps.com. Continue.
Wow. Throwing the hammer down on me. All right, let's get you caught up some of the things in my mind in the world of sports. On a busy Tuesday, it's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the White Mountains. I was talking to my wife this morning saying, I think this might be a good weekend to head on up to the Honda Resort and Casino and up to the mountains and get away. Great weekend weather. pull down the slots, have some fun, unwind, get away from it all at the Honda Resort and Casino. They also have the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament. What are you waiting for? It's the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of beautiful Pine Top, the Honda Resort and Casino. Calais Campbell is possibly going to play. So Eric went over to the Cardinals yesterday, and when I heard this as the day progressed yesterday afternoon and even last night, I was stunned by this. So here's Calais Campbell. What were you feeling after the play happened? If you missed it on Sunday, Calais Campbell essentially got the stinger of stingers in his neck through his body all the way down to his feet. Here's Calais.
Definitely was probably it was a scary moment for a second, but once I was able to move and everything, I felt like I was gonna be pretty good. It's one of those things where it was just, never thought I'd be in that situation, but I'm feeling pretty good now.
Sounds good. How did he look, E, when you were talking to him?
Look good.
Yeah.
Look like he all looked same, gigantic same. Like he always does.
He wasn't moving around a little sluggishly.
No, right? Not at all.
All right. Here's Calais. Will you play Thursday against the Seahawks?
My goal, I'm hopeful I can play Thursday. I got to get cleared. Still got to go to the hospital later on today and try to get cleared. But, I'm just very hopeful right now.
Well, they need him. But at the same time, they don't need him that badly.
Don't play him. Don't play Calais.
I would say sit out. I'd rather have Calais. It's one of those things. Who was the player? And it was a different sport. Brandon Roy, and it was a knee injury. It wasn't a neck. Brandon Roy tried to play through in a playoff series against the Suns when he was the Portland Trailblazers, coming off an ACL and way early.
Never the same player.
Never the same player.
And it basically ended his career.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, different sport. I understand that. And guys always try to play through it. But Calais Campbell, there's a lot of money tied up in Calais Campbell. Just purely from a business standpoint, he is one of the Cardinals' most valuable commodities. You cannot afford to send Calais Campbell out on the field, no matter how badly he wants to be out there. No matter how big a game it is. If it's December, do I look at this differently than mid-October? Probably so. Is this a must-win game for the Cardinals at this point of the season? If you're going to try to be in the race with Seattle, and I'll ask Kurt Warner about this, you don't want Seattle to be three up on you. And if you're going to get them, you're going to get them here. You're not going to get them up in Seattle. And I hear this, wow, Tennessee almost got them. Yeah, almost doesn't count in horseshoes or hand grenades. Come on. So I'm of the mindset of he doesn't play this week. It would be a terrific story if he did on a tough NFL player. The other side, it could be a tragic story. You don't know what's been weakened in there at this point. I'd be stunned if he were out there playing. What's the point? Here is Bruce Arians getting ready for Seattle. They actually started this last week. What a week. They were getting ready for the 49ers. They also had to get ready for the Seahawks.
Yeah, you break them down as much as you can. Then you've got young coaches breaking down this year to make sure it's as similar as possible. And then you look at the new things. We had coaches working last Wednesday and Thursday on that.
That's what you have to do. That's why you have all the staff. They've got the money to pay these guys. Let's not worry about that. Getting players ready to play on a short week.
You don't practice. You walk through. For us, today's Wednesday. As players and coaches, it's Wednesday. We do everything we do on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, we do everything we would on a Thursday. Then Wednesday morning's Friday, and then Wednesday afternoon's Saturday night. And that's just the way it is. But their bodies cannot practice. There's no way a guy can practice that soon.
Now, Anquan Boldin came out this morning and was talking about how he thinks it puts players at risk playing on short weeks. Well, this isn't breaking news, but it is nice to have a player that, in my opinion, is a future Hall of Famer stepping forward and saying, what are we doing here? When they talk about extending the season and having teams over in Europe and flying guys around and concussions and the body being worn out, I was talking to an executive yesterday who handles NFL stuff on the TV side. And he said, man, in dealing with the NFL, this guy's not within the league, but he deals with them quite often. They better make sure they don't kill the golden goose on all this stuff. Because some of the things you're starting to see with players being worn down, worn out, pushed through the ringer. And yeah, the numbers don't lie. They're great. They're terrific. But you have to give guys time to recover, their bodies to heal up, versus, hey, you got to turn back around and play in 4 days. That's brutally difficult, I think. The Carson Palmer struggles, Larry Fitzgerald's frustration. We'll talk with Kurt Warner about all those topics coming up here at the bottom of the hour. The Monday night game, San Diego actually looked pretty good last night. Nick Novak had 4 field goals. They got after Andrew Luck. Phillip Rivers had a touchdown pass. Chargers didn't look half bad, where a week earlier looked like one of the worst teams in the NFL. I was entertained by that game. But I did watch more baseball than anything else last night. And I'll talk to Pedro about the baseball stuff here in a minute. So ASU plays Washington Saturday afternoon. U of A has a crucial game. We've not talked much about U of A because their schedule's been so erratic. U of A has Utah this week, and Utah's coming off beating Stanford. I guess if there's a time to play Utah, it would be after they knocked off Stanford, and it's a road game for the Utes. For the Cats, you would like to see a little bit of consistency out of them. I think on the ASU end of things, the next 2 weeks are not games within the Pac-12 South. I know it's ass-backwards thinking to some of you, but I have to make sure I have all my questions about my team, if I'm Todd Graham, answered by the time that I get into the remaining games of the Pac-12 South, when they play Utah, UCLA, and U of A. If they still have questions, if they haven't been able to work through things in these next 2 weeks, they're going to have a problem. They can lose these next 2 weeks. I don't think they will. I think they'll split. I'd take a split. Winning at Washington State is not going to be easy. Washington State's not as bad as they used to be. ASU's a better team. I think they can win both. If they split, I'll be okay with that. I have to have all my questions answered. And ASU fans, you're not going to agree with me on this one. I have to have all my questions answered before I get to those final 3 games in the Pac-12 South. I really do. By the way, speaking of Pac-12 South, the hot name now that is circulating around for the Texas job, Jim Mora. That if, in fact, Mac Brown walks away, he's not going to quit. If he retires because his AD is retiring, Texas is going to put together a huge money deal and go after Jim Mora. I could see that happening. There's a lot of good college football stuff we'll get to as the week progresses on. On the other side, Pedro Gomez joins us to talk baseball. So Yasiel Puig getting criticized for his celebration. This is nothing new, but is it a deal from his country, his ethnicity, that this is how ball players from Latin America celebrate and that it's closed-mindedness up here in the States? Should we be more accepting and want to see the celebration of Yasiel Puig? If you're a Dodger fan, you love seeing it. Anybody else, you want to drill him? And Boston, Detroit today as well. We'll talk with Pedro on all things baseball, and then Kurt Warner in about 15 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for the latest news from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/pros2preps. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Comes to 2-1 from Wainwright. Fly ball right field. Back goes Beltran. He's in front of the wall and it bounces off the wall. Puig is on his way to second. Puig is on his way to third. The throw's not going to be in time. Gonzalez has already scored. A triple for Puig.
Brad Sussmat hearing Yasiel Puig going around the bases. Pedro Gomez joins us. Our weekly conversation with ESPN baseball insider Carlos Beltran. Not happy with Puig, who has been criticized throughout his rookie season for his style of play. Is this something that, let's get real here with one another, is this something that comes from his country that he's brought here that people just do not want to accept?
Well, there's no doubt, and Brad, you know I'm Cuban as well, and I'm very, even though I was raised here in the States, I'm very, very familiar with the style of play that how the game is played in Cuba. And there is, without question, that the style is more brash. It's more in your face. It's a macho style game that goes on. And the one thing is, though, that, you know, he is one of the few players that's come over from Cuba that has continued to play it at that same style. And it's a style that absolutely rubs a lot of people the wrong way here in the U.S. game. And you know, I mean, Levon Hernandez came over at a young age. So you can't just say that it's because he's younger than a lot of the other ones. Leonis Martin of the Rangers is young. Jose Iglesias, the Tigers shortstop, is young. They don't play it quite the same. They learn to adapt to the style over here. Puig only played a couple of months in the minor leagues. I saw some quotes from Mike Schmidt today where, you know, you don't do those type of things. You don't, not at the major league level. Carlos Beltran saying, you know, he's going to learn. You hope he does because you know what I would say, Brad, if he was playing this game 20, 25 years ago,
He'd
get drilled once a series just for the way he plays the game, the histrionics. And a lot of fans don't understand that. And I understand that they don't understand that. But this is the style of Major League. Just like there's a style to play the game in Cuba, and maybe it is brash, there's a style to play the game at the Major League level. And it's not quite the same.
Does it annoy you, or do you agree with it, when it's referred to as antics? Antics is a pretty strong statement. A guy hits a triple, and he's pumping his fist, and he's jumping up and down. That's antics.
Well, I think it's antics because of the way he has played the game over the last 4 months. You know, you see a guy hit a triple to put his team ahead, it could be Adam Eaton. It could be somebody else, and it's not going to be referred to as antics. It's going to be referred to as enthusiasm. Your track record has a lot to do with how people view you. And Puig's track record over the first 4 months has been to offend a lot of players and to go against the conventions of Major League Baseball.
But is that by his design, or is it just he doesn't know any better?
Probably a little bit of both. A little bit of both, because he has been, I know for a fact in talking to a lot of Dodger players, that veterans, that they have tried to tell him and educate him on the style of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So there's definitely been an education. But if a player doesn't want to listen to those words, then it's more on him for saying, you know what, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to play the game the way I want to play. And that's basically what Puig has done.
But let me turn it around on you, Pedro. Pedro Gomez with us, with Brad Susmat every week. Magic Johnson came into the league and had a style of play that everybody liked and was entertained by. A different sport, I understand, but Yasiel Puig is entertaining a lot of fans, even outside of Los Angeles, at a time when the game needs some entertainment. I understand there's a fine line there, but he's bringing something that this league desperately needs, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, Pete Rose, when he came up as a rookie in 1963, was accused of very many of the same things. Who does this kid think he is playing the game at the level and the style that he is playing? A lot of people know that Pete Rose is referred to as Charlie Hustle.
Right.
Charlie Hustle was a negative term when it was first pinned on Pete Rose. It was veteran players in the major leagues at that point saying, who the hell does this Charlie Hustle think he is? And it was not a term of endearment. It was absolutely condescending. But, Pete Rose turned it into a positive. And Major League Baseball accepted that. And Pete Rose, but Pete Rose did tame part of his game down. He did tone some things down. And Puig might have to tone some of his things down. Otherwise, this will never end. But I know what you're saying. The game can use an injection of enthusiasm. I absolutely understand what you're saying. But the game is also so grounded in its roots.
No. And look, Adam Wainwright will take care of this next year in a game in May, June, or July. He's not going to take care of it in a game in October.
No. No, the stakes are way too high. Absolutely, that won't be happening. Even if the Cardinals have a 10-1 lead,
You
don't do it because the series isn't over.
Okay, and who do you like in this series?
The Cardinals, I still like the Cardinals. And I think they play, even though the Dodgers have that superior starting pitching, the Cardinals just play so fundamentally sound. And at the end of the day, I think fundamentals do matter and will win out.
Pedro Gomez with us for a couple of minutes with Brad Sussmat. Baseball playoffs continue today and tonight. Kurt Warner in about 10 minutes on the Cardinals game. Is David Ortiz a Hall of Famer?
He's certainly very close if he's not. The part that may hurt him is the steroids. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was mentioned in the 2003 report. And that's the one part that is going to be very difficult to overcome. And, he's done everything on the field, but so have a lot of other guys that aren't going to get in or are very likely not to get in.
The drama of the other night and 15 postseason home runs, I mean, you have to look at it from that standpoint.
Without question.
But I understand what you're saying, but can you also make the argument, come on, that was 10 years ago.
Well, some voters won't. Mm-hmm. Some voters will not make the distinction that, hey, that was 10 years ago. And, you can qualify me among that group. And I'm a big David Ortiz fan. I personally like the guy a lot. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to know him very well over the years. But there's no erasing that for some voters, and I'm part of that group.
Right now you're a no on him.
I am because of the steroids.
Yeah.
Because of that.
But when will that ever change for you?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
I don't believe so. I'm pretty steadfast in that, and I know that there's a lot of fans that don't like that aspect of my voting. But it's just one vote.
How long is your list on that no vote? How many players do you have on that
Clemens,
list?
Bonds, McGuire.
No.
Last year in the Hall of Fame ballot, I voted for three players. I voted for Lee Smith, Alan Trammell, and Jack Morris. That was my entire list. Now, this year I'll add Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, and Frank Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
But I refuse to vote for anybody who has been touched by the steroid allegations.
Do you have questions in your mind about anybody as you're going through it? Is it like the first thought in your mind, was this guy a user? Or is it their accomplishments on the field? Where does that fall in your pecking order?
Well, for me, the user part eliminates you from my ballot. That's an automatic strike on my ballot, my personal ballot.
Three strikes.
Yeah, three, exactly. you're out. But not on everybody's. We saw. But you saw Bonds got less than 40%.
Mm-hmm.
Clemens less than 40%. McGuire's never risen above 23%.
Sure.
These are guys who, under normal circumstances, would have been first ballot guys. So obviously, I'm not alone.
Where are you at on Boston, Detroit?
Man, I think tonight, whoever wins tonight's game wins the series, because the way Detroit blew game two, it could be devastating. But if Verlander props them back up, then no harm. I think whoever wins tonight's game wins the series.
We were talking about the Scherzer trade yesterday with the Diamondbacks. And, I mean, obviously it looks horrendous now that Ian Kennedy has moved on. But at the time, did that trade make sense to you at the time?
Well, the Scherzer part to me was always a little bit questionable because, the previous administration had decided that Scherzer has a mechanical flaw and he's going to be injured.
Yes.
And you remember that.
Yep.
And
that was Josh Burns.
Exactly. Yeah. That was his administration, and they had decided that Max Scherzer just was a little too funky and that he was going to be susceptible to injury. Well, we're looking 4 years down the road, and Scherzer has gotten nothing but better every year. His win total has actually gone up every year that he's been a regular in baseball.
Yeah.
And he's gotten better and better.
And Kennedy, meantime, goes to San Diego and was pretty good towards the end of the season. So the Diamondbacks fire Charles Nagy. And it's interesting when you just go back through the making a mistake on Scherzer, giving up on Kennedy, firing the pitching coach. You could really make a strong case again on the Diamondbacks administration that you guys have blown it here. And here's another case in point on a couple of guys.
Yeah, Scherzer, and they're relying on their baseball people at the time of those trades.
Yeah.
I you can't really blame Kendrick and you can't blame Derek Hall, and because they're heavily relying on the decisions and the suggestions of their baseball people. So, and that's what every club does. Every club relies on the suggestions of its baseball people. A year ago, when Ben Cherington approached Red Sox management and said, we can get rid of Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, Josh Beckett, Nick Punto, and kind of hit reset. It's a big decision to make, even though in, you know, revisionist history, you could absolutely say easy move. But a year ago, you're looking at a younger Adrian Gonzalez, who's not yet 30 years old, who's a premier left-handed bat as a first baseman. You're looking at Carl Crawford, and you're looking at the years in Tampa, and sure, he hadn't produced in Boston, but you're still looking at a dynamic player, so it's not an easy decision to make. But they relied on the suggestions of Ben Cherington and his staff, and it was obviously the right call. By the way, I liked the Boston side at that trade at the moment it was made, and I was on record saying that. But, you've got to rely on your baseball people. And certainly the Max Scherzer deal, not looking good. Not looking good at all.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Stay well.
Okay, Brad. Take care.
Pedro Gomez with us every week talking baseball, ESPN baseball analyst. He's part of what we do here at Pros to Preps. Appreciate his time as always. On the other side, Kurt Warner. A lot of questions for Kurt about Carson Palmer. Many of you saying time to make a change at quarterback. What does Kurt Warner think of Carson Palmer's play so far? Frustration by Larry Fitzgerald. Can you see it? Does Kurt Warner see frustration in how Larry Fitzgerald is being used at this point? We're going to get into it next. X's and O's around the NFL with the NFL Network's Kurt Warner. He joins me after this timeout. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Pros2Preps.
Let's talk NFL football for a couple of minutes. Brad Sussmat with you, Pros to Prep. Spotlight for a couple of minutes on Cardinals-Seattle Thursday night at the stadium. We'll be out there as well as Carson Palmer and company take on the Seahawks. Kurt Warner with us from the NFL Network. He does not have to travel out of town, which means he'll probably have the whole crew over. Do you have the whole NFL Network crew over to play on your basketball court?
You know, I was hoping to have them over. Unfortunately, they're all coming in Wednesday night, and I've got a freshman football game for my son on Wednesday night, which I was trying to get him over to check out my son, but it's just not going to work timing-wise, unfortunately. But otherwise, I would have loved to have them all over.
If you're on the basketball court with Marshall and Dion and everybody, who's the best player?
I can't say that I've ever seen any of them play, but I'm still going to put my money on me.
That's good. And if they're on the sideline watching your freshman son play, who would have the strongest opinion on your son and the way that he plays other than you?
It probably would be a toss-up between Michael and Dion. They both would let me know what they thought, but Michael being a receiver and my son playing receiver, he'd probably have a pretty vocal opinion, but Dion would share his thoughts too.
Okay, serious question here. Is your son one of these guys, Kurt, are you already starting to look at him as a freshman in high school saying he can play beyond high school?
Yeah, I think so. You know, with what they've done as a football team, they got a good quarterback, two really good receivers, you know, that they're already starting to take notice. He's a big kid, very athletic. So, yeah, we've actually had some scouts already out to the games looking at him because they've heard about those three guys. So they're already looking at him, but it's way early. I just want to have a little bit of fun and play some football and let him enjoy it right now.
Kurt Warner with Brad Sussmat, Thursday night, NFL Network, Cardinals, Seattle. Are the Seahawks the second-best team in the NFL behind Denver, or are they right there neck and neck?
No, I don't think they're as good as Denver. I'm not sure they're the second-best team in the NFL either. Very good defense. We know they can run the football. Still think they have a lot of limitations in their passing game. If you took Russell Wilson's legs out of the mix, I think this team would struggle, you know, offensively to score points, because they just don't have any dynamic playmakers right now in the passing game. Now, that may all change when Percy Harvin gets back, whenever that is. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think they struggle very much there, and that's why you're seeing some of these games that they're playing. They're winning, you know, 12-7 or, you know, 20-13 or whatever it was last week, or they're just not able to separate themselves because they don't have that big play passing game. And, you know, Russell makes a lot of great plays with his feet, but, you know, they just struggle with the ball in the air. And I think right now that limits this team from being up there in that upper echelon with teams like Denver.
Who's the best team in the NFC then, from your view?
Well, you know, I think the NFC is a complete toss-up. I really do. At times, the Bears look really good. And again, Seattle's looked really good at times. San Francisco's had their moments, although I think they've got a lot of issues in their passing game as well. You know, the Packers can play with anybody. I mean, who knows in the NFC East? I mean, you know, New Orleans maybe.
You know,
just the way they've played top to bottom, have the ability to score, and their defense has played really well. They're probably the best team in the NFC right now. But really, it is wide open, and I think it's going to come down to, you know, get to playoff time and who plays the best in that head-to-head matchup or who matches up best against another team, because I'm not sure one team is more dominant than a number of others.
Carson Palmer, of course, on Thursday night on the field for the Cardinals as they take on the Seattle Seahawks. Kurt Warner from the NFL Network here in the Valley with us for a couple of minutes on the show. What do you make out of Carson Palmer 6 games in? I'm getting a lot of replace him. I don't buy into that 6 games into it and put Drew Stanton out there. What do you see out of Carson, Kurt?
Well, I mean, I see a lot of kind of feast or famine with Carson is that he makes a lot of plays on the football field. He makes a lot of big throws at different times throughout games. The unfortunate thing is because of that big arm and the nature of this offense, we're seeing him try to make a lot of big plays that aren't really there to be made. And when that happens, the ball's going the other direction. They're not keeping the chains moving. And, you know, it's been tough. You know, it's been tough on this offense to really kind of get going and get into a rhythm and, you know, drive in, drive out, make those plays. And so, you know, it's tough. You know, there's some issues, offensive line at times. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of different things going on. But I think the biggest thing to me is that I just see Carson really trying to push the ball down the field. And I know Coach Arians wants to do that. I mean, you look back last year to Andrew Luck, kind of the same thing. He's made a lot of big plays down the field, but also had a lot of turnovers. And, you know, a lot of plays go against them. And that's really what you kind of have to guard as a quarterback, is to be able to make those big plays and know when to make them, but also when not to take those chances. And right now he doesn't seem like he's figured that out completely. And so we're going to see some good things. And, you know, those can turn into some wins, but we're also going to see some bad things that can lead to a loss or two.
Are you surprised by his play to this point? They're 3-3, but the 9 picks, 5 TDs. Are you surprised by his play specifically?
Not necessarily in regards to, again, I think I see the potential to have, you know, the big plays and to do the things that Carson can do. I think when you add in issues up front, which is somewhere where I think Carson struggled before, is that he's a timing guy. He likes to be in the pocket and, you know, his technique. If the technique gets away from him, he's not one of those quarterbacks that can be extremely effective like an Aaron Rodgers or someone that can move and throw on the run. You know, he needs to be clean. So you have those protection issues. I knew that would lead to some issues. And then, I know Carson that he great confidence in what he does, great confidence in his ability to make big, tough throws. And so within this offense, I knew that would lead to some turnovers as well. You know, maybe I didn't think it would be a discrepancy from 5 to 9. But again, I can't say I'm fully surprised within this offense. I thought maybe they would have had more success to go with some of the, you know, some of the turnovers than they have so far. But kind of in the mix of what I expected.
Kurt Warner with Brad Sussmat. Does Fitz look frustrated to you?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, you know, for me, just knowing Fitz,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of those guys when I was here that I would try to find ways to move him around and get him more targets with the ball, always knowing, though, that he is an outside receiver. He is a guy that likes to be on the edges, a guy that likes to get those one-on-one matchups, and that's where he thrives, is being able to get those chunk throws and get one-on-one on a corner and use that big body to succeed. And where I kind of feel he's maybe getting frustrated is, yeah, they're moving him around a lot, trying to get him a lot of targets and a lot of touches, but it's not the kind of touches he's used to. It's not the big play touches. It's not the one-on-one opportunities to change complexion of game type touches. You know, it's, you know, 6 yards here and 7 yards there, and, you know, having to deal with a lot of guys in the middle, all things that he was never real comfortable with when I was here. And we would mix him in there every once in a while to try to just change things up, or to, you know, not allow teams to press, you know, press him and put a safety over the top. But he always, you know, that always frustrated him, because he just felt, hey, this is who I am, this is where I'm best. Is on the outside, and I see them trying to use him a lot inside, and I feel like he's getting frustrated that he can't get those big play, game-changing type plays that has made Larry Fitzgerald Larry Fitzgerald. And you know, and then you couple in, you know, the hamstring injuries, where he just seems like he can't really get out and go the way he normally does. And, you know, again, just outside looking in, he seems like there's some frustration from some of those things.
No, and it's and you know what? You and I are dead on that, because as I'm watching games, they won't get in on him too tight, but when they do, I'm seeing a lot more animation out of him. And I don't know how you overcome the issues that you're talking about at this point in the season. I mean, on one hand, 3-3, given all the turnover, I'd probably take that at this point in the season. But on the other hand, 3-3 in this division, you're almost in a must-win situation here on Thursday night.
I mean, you never like to say must-win, because I think a lot of teams are going to kind of win some, lose some. But yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're in your division and you have a chance to make up a game by playing that team in your division, especially at home,
yep.
You have to get those ones. You know, it's tough to be able to come back on teams in your division, especially when they beat you. And so, you know, you look at things and where Seattle is right now, they go up 3 games on you. That's a lot of games with only 9 to play. So tough to come back there. So you always want to try to get these kind of games.
Kurt Warner, before I let you go, what are you looking for on Thursday night?
You know, a couple things. You know, I like the way Arizona's defense has been playing, turning the ball over. But can they contain Russell Wilson in the pocket? I mean, that to me is the key. If you can do that, I think you can stymie this offense and you can have a chance. And then on the flip side, kind of what we've talked about, it is that you just can't make mistakes with the football against this secondary of Seattle. Is that, you know, you have to protect it. They'll give you some opportunities. I think the Cardinals do a great job of formationing, and you have to formation this team to get those big corners to play off a little bit and give you some space to work. So I think they'll do a good job there, but you just can't give them any opportunities to turn the ball over, because they're very, very good at it, especially Richard Sherman, Thomas on the back end. They're really good at that. So those are the two keys, in my opinion, to the game, is keeping Russell Wilson contained, making him beat you with his arm, and then not turning the ball over and giving Seattle some easy points.
Whenever you're on with me, I always ask you this: what do you have going on with your foundation, or what do you have coming up that people should be aware of?
You know, right now we're continuing to move forward with Treasure House, which is our supportive living home for adults with disabilities. So we're moving forward with that. It's kind of our big endeavor right now here. Doing some stuff back in St. Louis. We always do a Warner's warm up to get coat donations to warm up the kids and people in that area. So we're doing that back there. But those are really the two main things that we have going at this particular time.
Stay well. Appreciate your time as always. See you Thursday.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Kurt Warner with us for a couple of minutes. Always good to visit with Kurt Warner. Appreciate his time and his insight. Very interesting comments there on Larry Fitzgerald and frustration. And I've just seen it here over the last few weeks that there's some body mannerisms that you don't like to see. And when somebody is at 30 years of age and they're closer to the end than the beginning, and they're not getting the ball as much as they'd like, or where they'd like, or in the spots they'd like, or being used in a certain way, it's very interesting, because as you lose more games, that frustration is only going to build. I'm not sitting here starting stuff up. It's just a fact. I've seen too many guys that it doesn't end well when things go in the wrong direction. Brad Susmat with you, Pros to Preps, the Brad Susmat Show, of course, on White Mountain Radio. You can follow me on Twitter at Brad Susmat, CES. MAT, back with more after this timeout on a busy Tuesday.
college football fans, check out the Recruiting Roundup with Jared Cohen and Scout.com insider Jason Jewell on pros2preps.com.
Brad Sussmat with you. Good Tuesday. So ASU let it be known today that representatives from the Sun Bowl and Alamo Bowl are going to be at the game on Saturday to see ASU in Washington. A trip to El Paso, no offense to those of you in El Paso. No, I don't want to go there and see the Boot Factory. The Alamo Bowl, if I can get to San Antonio and go to the Riverwalk. Eric, where would we be rooting for on this one? I mean, obviously, they still have the Pac-12 title game in front of them, and they have the Rose Bowl in front of them, possibly, in the Pac-12 South. But if it's not one of those two, where are we wanting to go?
What are the other choices?
Well, I would imagine the Holiday Bowl would pop up.
It wouldn't be bad. It's hard because, you know, ASU has played in San Diego recently. They've been to the Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
They haven't been there in a while, but it seems like ASU has played in the Sun Bowl a million times.
I think Steve Campbell was the last quarterback that was at the Sun Bowl.
Yeah, the J.R. Redmond era.
Yeah.
It's true. But the Alamo Bowl would be fun, different.
When we were at Pac-12 Media Day, the representative from the Alamo Bowl was sitting next to me on a bus, and he was busy on his phone, and we started chatting about what we do here, and he's like, well, if you ever get to San Antonio with your team, let us know. We'll take care of you.
And that's usually a really well-attended game. It's usually against a Big 12 school, so it's an exciting matchup.
Yeah. Well, the Big 12 is not any good this year. So.
Well, it's always an exciting matchup just because the game. Usually the Alamo Bowls are played in like the high 30s, low 40s.
That's not what we want. I don't want to hear that.
What?
I don't want to hear that.
Who wants to watch a 9-7 bowl game?
I want to be – yeah, you're talking about – temperatures, or I thought you were talking temperatures.
No. Oh, it's in a dome. Right. No,
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, the game, the
yeah,
tempo.
Yeah, no, I'll be in the 30s
the
or 40s.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yep. Like last year, Oregon State, Texas, that was like a 40-something to 30-something game. So.
And then Mack Brown got his defense solved, and then they fired the guy. This segment of the show is brought to you by Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Are you guys in the market for a new vehicle, a used vehicle? This morning, I was having a conversation with my wife about the holidays. Yeah, I know. I'm going to work the holidays in here on October 15th. I think that's close enough. Where are we going to be on Thanksgiving? Where are we driving to? We're going to be here for Christmas. What are we going to do with all the events that are coming up? I'm a busy guy. I got 4 kids. I've got a business here. I've got to run around to events. Tonight, it's the Suns game. Thursday night, it's the Cardinals game. Saturday afternoon, it's the ASU game. In between that, I'm going to this practice, that practice, doing my thing. And I'm doing it in the Fusion Hybrid right now, which makes a lot of sense for me in the vehicle that I'm in. You guys may be in the market for a truck if you thought about the F-150. I've driven the F-150 before. They've got a great selection at Santan Ford. General Manager Tim Hovick, he is all about local, local, local. That's why he's been a great partner with us since day one of Pros 2 Preps. Why don't you stop on in and see for yourself Santan Ford or log on to santanford.com. Check him out. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Gene Wojciechowski writes for for ESPN.com. He put out a second half notes column today. We're now into the second half of the college football season. He is one of those guys that when he writes it, he's very seldom wrong, if ever wrong. I mean, we all make mistakes, but through the years, he's just been dead spot on. And he writes that Fresno State is going to run the table, but nobody will be outraged when the undefeated Bulldogs are left out of the BCS National Championship. He writes ditto for Louisville. Louisville will run the table. Now, Eric and I talked about this yesterday. Louisville has nobody left on their schedule
And that's not their fault.
It's not their fault. It's like Ohio State. All these Buckeye fans, I just want to tell you to shut up, okay? The Big Ten's awful, and Michigan's not good. So the Michigan-Ohio State game is not going to mean anything more than you say you own Michigan. It's not going to help you. If Clemson beats Florida State this weekend, you're going to drop. That's just a fact.
Yep.
That's the way it is. I mean, if anything, if you're an Ohio State fan, if you're an Ohio State fan and you're hyperventilating over, are you going to be able to play in the national title game? All that I can say to you is just go shut up and win. Go win the games against all these bad teams that you have on your schedule. That's not your fault. Your team's pretty good, but you don't have anything there to get excited about.
All I can say is thank God the BCS is over this year.
No, that's you're right. But Eric, it's like...
Thankfully.
UCLA is sitting there at 9. In the next 2 weeks, they have at Stanford and at Oregon. Now, let's just say they win both those games. You'd have to put them at 3?
Yep.
2?
Probably three.
You'd have to look at UCLA in the next 2 weeks. Go win at Stanford, go win at Oregon. You don't move them up to five.
And there's even some SEC schools that have one loss that could easily jump back into the picture. Like LSU, if LSU beats Alabama, one loss LSU, their only loss is to Georgia, they're probably going to climb back in the top, I don't know, three, four.
No, you're right. But it's like Missouri. Everybody's all hot and bothered about Missouri at this point. They just lost their quarterback. They lost their quarterback, and they have terrific receivers at Missouri. Gene continues right. Gene Wojciechowski, he continues right. Some things are very interesting. USC is going to make a run at Kevin Sumlin. Jadeveon Clowney and Johnny Manziel will break land speed records in declaring for the NFL draft. He writes, I don't blame them. I would agree on both those fronts. And again, I have to look at it from the Cardinals' point of view. The Cardinals are sitting here with an aging veteran quarterback and two guys behind him that are just guys at this point. And so if Johnny Manziel is sitting there on the board, did you see where CBS made Texas A&M against Auburn their national game this weekend? Auburn's a good little story. They're mm-hmm. playing better this year. Mm-hmm. But it's only because it's Johnny Manziel.
Sure.
He brings big ratings.
What is his draft value? Like, is he a second-round pick?
I don't know.
Third-round pick? End of the first round? Middle of the first round?
But if you're the Cardinals, I can play this game now on October 15th. If you're the Cardinals and it's draft day and Johnny Manziel is sitting there on the board, I'm not even saying a first-round pick, Eric. I'm just saying he's still there. Because I don't know his stock yet. We'll go to the combine and all that stuff in February. But if you're the Cardinals, you have to be looking at quarterbacks this year. You have to be looking at quarterbacks in the draft.
And there's plenty of good ones.
There's plenty of good ones this year. He writes that Braxton Miller will have a monster second half of the season. So will Georgia running back Todd Gurley. Georgia's been a disappointment to me. Baylor running back Lachey C. Strunk. Northern Illinois quarterback Jordan Lynch will have a big second half of the season. There's an outside chance, I've said this a couple times, and it makes the Fiesta Bowl people cringe, where Northern Illinois could be sitting there for their game, and I don't want to see that. The Heisman officials will have to invite at least six finalists, maybe more. Now, if we're to go through the Heisman Trophy stuff today, I still think Manziel leads Mariota. You have to answer this question. What has Johnny Manziel done to lose the Heisman Trophy at this point? I don't think he's done anything. I don't think he's done anything at this point. But when you go through the quarterbacks that are all coming forward and having great seasons, and there's a ton of them, there's just a ton of them this year, you've got to look at adding Brett Hundley to the mix and some of the other kids that are out there. I call them kids. Some of the other guys that are out there. So it's a great time in this weekend in college football. I'm very much looking forward to not just the ASU-Washington game, but and the U of A game. I think U of A this weekend, you start out in conference play 0-2, and you get whacked around. I don't know if you can recover from that. I don't know if you can do that. Again, we are with you every Monday through Friday, and, of course, we have the show for you here on Pros to Preps. AZ Sports. Should I start working in AZ Sports 360 at this point?
Well, it's going to happen. We're transitioning.
We're transitioning?
Yeah.
Should we just let people know if you've not seen AZ Sports 360 yet, you need to go see AZ Sports 360 and bookmark it and all that stuff?
Or Sports 360 AZ. Either one.
Or Sports 360 AZ.
Whichever one you want.
Whichever one you want at this point. It's fine. I didn't get my volleyball story in, but I will get it in. Again, we have plenty of content for you on our website, and you can go to Twitter at Brad Sussmat, CESMAT. And thanks to the people of White Mountain Radio. Always good to have the people of White Mountain Radio part of what we do on a day-in, day-out basis. I hear Snowflake is killing up there on the football season.